It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Yannakos here with Renee Ritchie. Will Apple ever become a VR company? Is there a new Thunderbolt display on the way? What else can we expect from WWDC? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 509, recorded Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. The Woz Cut. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/MacBreak. And by Ministry of Supply. Ministry of Supply uses performance technology to make your work clothes incredibly comfortable. For performance menswear designed to work with your body, visit ministryofsupply.com/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak to get 15% off your first purchase. Offer expires June 30th, 2016. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest from Apple land. Andy Yannakos here from the Chicago Sun-Times. He's living in Blueville today.
Yes, we're in the transitional space of the office cleanup where the office is sparkling clean, but there are no like really nice video lights, and there are so you have to deal with like the work light that I was using in the other room to sort socks and laundry with.
I dread the coming office cleanup for my office. It has so many layers of midden, all the stuff, and I never so it's just a mess. And the basement.
You got to do it. You got to do the. I keep coming back to what Clemenza said to Michael Corleone in the first Godfather. Like when there's going to be this gang war, says, "Oh, this kind of stuff has to happen. How bad is it going to be? Pretty damn bad. But you know, this thing's got to happen every 10 years.
Clears out
the bad blood.
Clears out the bad blood. Yeah. Let's go to the mattresses. Also
I will say that I found my oldest so far surviving Mac T-shirt from 1991. So
wow.
I have a T-shirt that can run for Congress now, and he's going to be running for president sooner.
Actually, John, I think there's an older T-shirt in my office in those old tie-dye hippie
B-mug.
I think it's a B-mug shirt, and I'm pretty sure it dates from the 80s, my friends, the 80s. That's Renee Ritchie. He's from imore.com, more or less, and he's decided to live in the glow of the dying sun, apparently, 80 million years hence. Here is my what
Andy looked so cool. I decided to bring some heat.
What era is this?
Yeah, that's like 1990.
It says the B Mug T-shirt, which stands for Berkeley McIntosh Users Group, tie-dyed in Berkeley by Deadheads.
I didn't bring them with me, but at the Apple Infinite Loop store right now, they always change up the designs of the T-shirts. And this month, they have three retro T-shirts. They have the original Isaac Newton Apple logo, the Susan Kare icons, and the original Mac icon on white T-shirts. And they look spectacular.
Jealous.
Yeah, so if you're in the area, check them out.
I'm going to be so thank you so much. I'm sure that the package is in transit where you bought me one of each of those.
This is beautiful.
Because why would I not want that? You're going to be like the Canadian like T-shirt mule. Drug mule or like for Cupertino.
Which one should I wear? Should I wear I'm pretty sure it's still a B mug. It just doesn't say anything. It's tie dye. That's a beautiful tie dye.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. So is it true? Is Apple going to have to shut down FaceTime and messages
again?
Damages award now $190 million. Virnet X, is it fair to call them a patent troll?
Patent ogre.
Any name you wish.
I mean, they sued. It's one of those things where it's like a patent that's in an adjacent area that is, if loosely and broadly interpreted in a certain district in Texas, will allow them to get an easy verdict and a lot of money. And it's caused a lot of chaos because Apple had to totally re-architect the way things like FaceTime worked and move them through relay servers when originally it was meant to be a peer-to-peer system that would be, you know, theoretically have fewer points of failure. And Apple has kept appealing, and they have kept Verdanex has kept winning. Vernet X has kept winning, and now they're asking a judge just to order Apple to shut the services down because apparently that's something you can do in Texas, Leo, at least in the Rocket Doc.
Dr. Mom wants us to call them gonifs, which is apparently some Yiddish term that probably is filthy, but is
the opposite of menches.
Yeah, but this is a little tight. I was a little more slender in those days. Putting on the B-Mug shirt. Wow, I don't know if I can breathe, but So they asked the court in Texas, of course, to make Apple stop. This is following their victory to the tune of $625 million. Now they say they want Apple to stop offering FaceTime and messages, and they want the penalty to be increased by $190 million, so that would make it, to my careful calculations, like gajillion dollars.
Yeah.
Also, Apple's got that much money in the cup holders of the new Apple car.
Yeah, they could afford it, but it's the
litigation that's painful.
Yeah.
Right.
This dates back to a 2012 ruling that was thrown out, then tried again. I mean, the U.S. Apple Patent and Trademark Office has rejected the four patents.
Apple can litigate this forever, but it has totally stopped development. Like, for example, FaceTime, the development on that has totally stopped. Apple's done almost nothing with it except for re-architecting it in a way that caused a lot of problems for a lot of people. And the scary thing is, like, I don't know what FaceTime and iMessage are doing that the same patent couldn't be broadly interpreted for other instant messaging clients, which is something we've seen with patent trolls before, is they go after a couple small targets, get some money, go after a couple big targets, try to get more money, and then go after everybody. So I just don't know how often we can keep seeing this, Leo.
Yeah, that's one I've been hearing in the post Google I/O stuff. I've been hearing that one of the reasons why Google has continued to update and do like revolutionary things with their messaging software is to shift from stuff that has only bulletproof patent protection and make sure it has like kryptonite protected protection.
Yeah.
And stuff that is absolutely that's been sort of like battle tested already, because as Renee implied, it's almost like you're building a spacecraft. Every time you want a company like Apple or Google or Facebook wants to introduce a new technology, they have to make sure that the patents are absolutely 100% airtight. And that doesn't mean, like with the Samsung trial, making sure you didn't copy from anybody else. It means that I have to know if I'm using this system, where did this first idea come from and who owns the IP from that? And if I'm including this code library from here, where did that code library come from? And it's not about like making sure that people don't developers don't get screwed over. It's making sure that if there is just that little bit of wiggle in the patent, that's where a patent troll can get in and really cause trouble. We often complain about how, you know, Apple doesn't get it. They're not improving FaceTime. They're not keeping up. And that what Renee says is tracks with what I've been hearing, that there's a lot of implications to Apple moving forward with FaceTime, and they've been frustrated by things that have nothing to do with technology.
Yeah, and it's so hard to see because, you know, Andy's point is spot on, but we saw a bunch of developers sued over in-app purchases on a patent based on fax machines, which I think is almost impossible for anybody to predict, but it was allowed to continue. And it was small amounts because they figure people will just pay out, and it helps them build their war chest. And I don't know. I don't know what we can do.
Now, here's a patent from a non-patent troll, at least an entity that has a little more clout than VernetX, Caltech.
Yeah.
Also suing over. Apple says, by the way, we're the number one target of patent trolls. Caltech's says it has a patent for Wi-Fi chips and the Wi-Fi chips in Apple's technology, which I'm sure Apple doesn't make their own Wi-Fi chips. As far as I know, they don't.
I don't know if they ship them.
You know, their Broadcom is also being sued. Broadcom creates the Wi-Fi chips in the iPhone and the MacBook and other Apple products. In fact, Broadcom creates the Wi-Fi chips in pretty much every computer I've ever seen. Intel does some Wi-Fi chips, but almost all my Dells all have Broadcom chips.
And how can these not be friend? I mean, and that's the thing is that sometimes they don't sue immediately. They wait for a while until the technology is embedded in everything and then sue. But usually the fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory access rules, which means that if you want your technology to be included in a standard that everybody uses, you have to agree to make those patents easily accessible to everybody who uses it. Otherwise, you know, those two things are very different priorities.
You know, it's really a lawsuit against Broadcom, which creates the chips. And the patents date to 2006 and 2012. They're for 802.11n and 802.11ac. So they're recent technologies that, quote, allow for faster data transmissions, end quote, while simplifying the hardware. Sometimes these are legit, and Apple probably is just in there because they have deep pockets. Mm-hmm. They're like everybody else using Broadcom's chips. All right, enough court stuff, right?
Yeah.
We won't do any more of that because that's boring.
And it's so enervating.
It is. I feel the life sucked out of me right now.
Exactly.
Thank God I'm wearing a B-Mug tie-dyed shirt because that pushes life.
It's invigorating.
It's invigorating.
That shirt on, you're at least 15% stoned.
An argument can be made for 17.
It does have a little patchouli fragrance left over. Okay, so WWDC just around the corner. Thunderbolt stock limited for the Thunderbolt displays at Apple stores. Usually that means perhaps something new is coming along. And Apple hasn't updated its displays in a long time, right?
No, they're waiting on Thunderbolt 3, which is also rumored to be shipping.
Ah, so is Thunderbolt 3 downward compatible? So if I had a new MacBook Pro with Thunderbolt 3 on it, could I use an old Thunderbolt display? Yes, right?
Yes.
Next question. Could I use a Thunderbolt 3 display with an old MacBook Pro? Go the other way.
I guess it would depend on what the display supported, because you need the 3 to push the amount of bandwidth that you need for a 5K display, for example. So if the 5K display, whatever resolution it supports, if it does support low resolutions, you'd be able to drive it as a low-res monitor, but not at anything approaching the 5K mark.
At least one UK Apple store reports stock of those Thunderbolt monitors didn't run out, but was returned to the warehouse. Also, Airport Extreme and Time Capsules out of stock at many Apple stores, although 9to5 Mac saying that could be because of a recent firmware update or an FCC compliance issue. But we did hear rumors, weren't they? Didn't we, that they were going to update the Airport Extreme?
Might be due because they last updated them in WWDC a couple of years ago. Yeah. They introduced that tower design.
They do have AC Airport Extreme, so they're at least up to the latest 802.11 standard. But it would make sense. New displays, new 5K cinema display. Do they still call them cinema displays?
Thunderbolt displays.
Thunderbolt displays. A 5K Thunderbolt would be really nice.
Yeah. It would also be a really good gift to the pro community that's feeling a little bit short-shrifted right
now. Yes.
Of course, the difficulty is that it's not like having the old cinema displays where you could simply plug it into pretty much anything in the product line. Driving a 5K display is a very, very special thing that will require kind of like the best CPUs you can possibly get.
Yeah.
If we are thinking about Apple introducing a 5K Thunderbolt display, the implication would be that there is hardware coming that's going to support it as well. That's not necessarily a Mac Pro.
I just bought, and I don't know how I'm going to use it. It's kind of impractical. A 43-inch Dell display that's 4K. It's 1080p times 2 times 4. So you could have – the idea is it has 4 inputs. Are you carrying it over here, John? Yeah, John is actually carrying it over here in a display of amazing manly fortitude.
A display of unusual size.
This thing, yeah, look at the size of that, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, it eclipsed Andy.
I don't know if you really...
That's a tanning bed.
It's a tanning bed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Minecraft must look so good on that.
But it has 4 inputs, so you could, in theory, I think it's really more for... It's especially modern for day traders and stuff people who want, like, rocket launchers.
Supervillains, like Leo. You could run your supervillain empire.
Because you could put 4 computers on it. You could have 4 1080p displays on it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
I think a lot of people ignore how much their computing experience can be changed by just swapping out to a really good display on a really good, like, monitor arm. My Dell display here isn't even particularly good. It's really, really good. It's a $350 display. It supports all the video modes, but it's not like super elegant. But the fact that now it's plugged into my MacBook has changed how I use my MacBook. The fact that now I have for the first time a screen that's attached to a $200 monitor arm, and now I can move it exactly wherever I want it to go. As I'm emptying out my office and rebuilding my office, it's, well, here are all the different screens I didn't need anymore, because now I have this screen that I can park direct. I can move it directly behind my camera when I'm podcasting, or I can move it low when I'm doing this, or I can have it over here when I need to be a second monitor for this other computer over here. So a lot of people, if they're thinking about budgeting $1,500 to $2,000 for a new Mac, oftentimes you might find that if you just spend $1,000 improving just where you're sitting, how you're sitting, what you're typing on, and what you're looking at, that's an even better way of improving how your office works.
Maybe a better way to spend the same amount of money would be to buy what we bought for the Ultimate Virtual Reality Gaming Machine, which is one of these 34-inch 21.9 curved monitors. That's about $1,300.
Lawrence of Arabia looks so good on
that. Yeah. I would love to see Apple, and I wouldn't be surprised. Everybody's selling them now. I wouldn't be surprised to see Apple make one of these. This is I can't remember which one we bought, but this is the LG. And would you need – this is Thunderbolt. I don't know if it's Thunderbolt 3, but this is Thunderbolt. I don't know if you'd need Thunderbolt 4 or 3 to drive it, but it is. These are gorgeous.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think these are a little more practical than – stacked 4K, the idea of going super wide.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Some people don't like turning their heads. Some people don't like looking up and down. So there's,
I guess,
personality
you're right.
traits.
Yeah, and these. Let's see. This is the LG has two DisplayPort.
A good indicator for Apple is what they did on the iMac. So if we look back a few years, they introduced the IPS panel on the last iMac redesign. And when they had a good amount of the iMacs on market, they brought out the new Thunderbolt display with the same panel.
Right.
So if you look at the current iMac and its 5K panel, especially now that it's IP3 rated for color gamut, it's a good indicator that that's probably the panel we'll see in the next Thunderbolt display.
Is there any indication in OS X about what aspect ratio? It'd support any aspect ratio.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. We plugged that 43-inch into my 2012 MacBook, and it worked fine. And I don't know what the resolution was. It was very high resolution, but it worked fine.
Could you read it, Leo, or did you have to scale it up?
No, it does. I love high DPI. Apple invented this. Everybody's doing it now, but Apple invented it and for their Retina displays, and we totally need that. I don't know how well others do it. The way Apple does it is beautiful, which is they use half the native resolution, but they take the extra pixels and they do anti-aliasing, so it really looks super crisp.
And they're
nice.
Smart enough to let the content be native resolution. So if
that's
you have a video or an image, it's full res.
That's the key.
For me, I think that the real sell of Apple displays is just the quality of the image, where you get this super high contrast display. Whenever I'm testing out a screen, it's always with probably the first Godfather movie, the opening scene.
So dark.
Not only is it halfway shadows, there's supposed to be detail in the shadows.
Right.
So a decent screen, you will see blacks and you'll see a tuxedo where you can see like highlights on the lapels. On a really bad screen, you won't see the highlights on the lapels. But on a really, really good screen, you will see that there is wrinkles and there's lights and there's things like that happening. And with Apple displays, just things are so much crisper, so much more detailed. There are times when even the difference between doing like a Photoshop thing here on my desktop here, I will actually have my iPad as a second display so that if I really, really want to see how good this possibly can be, I will drag the window into the iPad because it really is the highest quality display that I have in the house.
Yeah. I think really that's really you nailed it, which is that people pay a premium for an Apple display. But if you're a photographer, a videographer, if you're somebody who needs an accurate display.
Well, I think that's one of the few features that really improves everybody's lives. It's not until you go back to let's say that you're using your MacBook and you're watching videos or you're just on the web or you're just looking at your own photos, and then you help your kid with their homework and they have a school issued $300 Samsung Chromebook, and you see, oh my God, I'm looking at the same pictures I was looking at on my MacBook, but it doesn't look like in any way that I don't want to be staring at this for 3 or 4 hours. And I feel like I'm going to be hauled off to child protective services by making my kid use this display.
Yeah, the first time I saw the 5K display at the event, I felt like so it was gorgeous. Better than reality. Like I would fall into it and just not want to leave.
Isn't it funny?
And they're really
though,
good about individually calibrating them, and the color management technology through their whole device stack makes sure that, you know, what you see is pretty much what you get going through the whole thing.
Isn't it how funny how used to it you get though? Because I remember when I first got my 5K iMac, I was like amazed. And a couple of days later, it's just my computer.
But then you look at a regular display, and the pixel is so big, you feel them cutting your eyes.
I think sandpaper is the... Yes.
I got to say that, that's for me, that's more of a change when I'm going from one MacBook to the other. It's one of the reasons why I can't deal with a 13-inch MacBook Air. But on my desktop, given that there's going to be like a foot to 18 inches of distance, I certainly don't mind it at all. I'd much rather have a higher quality, lower resolution display than a 4K display. I can certainly see the difference, but it's not that sort of retina burning difference that I get on laptop displays.
I'm kind of stuck because once you buy the 5K iMac, you have to use its. I mean, I guess you could put it in the corner and face it away from you, and drive other monitors, but you kind of want to use its display, right? So if you want to get, so what I have is two of my older cinema displays on either 24-inch cinema displays on either side or 27-inch cinema displays on either side, and then the Mac in the middle. And I'm really stuck. There's not really, I can't, that's one of the reasons that 43-inch, I'm kind of wondering, well, what am I going to do with it? I'm not going to attach it to my 5K iMac. That wouldn't be a good idea.
I have a couple of friends who put vertical 4K panels on either side of their iMac display.
Yeah,
they just want all the pixels.
I've seen that too.
So sideways, so you get the portrait mode.
Yeah.
Then it's like ears on your 5K. Really big
like
Dumbo
a TIE fighter,
ears.
Actually, the first time I saw a friend, a developer who had that display, it really felt like as a kid going to mass every Sunday, like the way they have the stained glass behind the altar.
Yeah.
They have like
it's a triptych.
Big vertical panels.
Yeah, it's a triptych.
The last stations of the cross, and then in the middle there's the beatification or something.
I like it. And then
the thing that's getting me now is the high dynamic range. Sorry, where they have better color, because once you start seeing the better color, that to me is much more impressive than a lot of like the 3D fads or things that we had for a while.
I agree. Do we have any HDR monitors yet?
It's a slow process. So right now, the new iMacs have that P3 color gamut, so it does have a wider range of colors. And there's some I forget the name of the company, but LG is doing a high dynamic range monitor television set. And there's a couple other, I think Vizio has a $120,000 version, but also a $6,000 version.
I think the one that we have for the ultimate virtual reality game machine is the Acer Predator.
Nice.
But $1,300 and it really looks beautiful. Question from the chat room. I'll open it, either one of you guys. Do you need to calibrate the Apple 5K iMac, or does it come to your home kind of ready to go?
We're
about to say the same thing. Yeah, it comes calibrated. As a matter of fact, most new monitors, even third parties I've seen, the cheap ones are not calibrated. The ones that look the same but that cost like $80 more, for instance, will typically, you're buying a calibrated monitor that will come with a sheet of paper. Here is the test sheet on this.
Right.
Here's how it was calibrated and what the specs of this actual screen are.
But if you're a pro, you probably have... whatever they call that, photo retinometer or something that you put on I call them screen suckers.
Yeah.
The spiders that you put on the screen and calibrate it, create your own color profile. Apple really created that whole thing in the earliest days because they were doing a lot of pre-press. They were the
color
first.
Color matching.
They were
so
first
important.
To do that, weren't they?
Yeah, and some people do. Like if you really work in a business where you need precise color matching over time, then you probably want to check it. You know, you might be doing it on a monthly basis, and then six months. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, things do change, and you might change profiles for some project or another. So if you're in that business, though, I assume you have spiders hanging off your monitor pretty much every day anyway.
Yeah.
And also, when you change the lighting in your office, you also need to recheck that calibration because your eyes happen to change from month to month and year to year sometimes. So
I want True Tone.
Yeah, exactly. If you're in the business of, I had this idea that. Because I go to a lot of like big comics conventions, and I've always thought about you. I'd love to do cosplay, but I don't know what I would go as.
Cosplay. Really? Really?
Yes. it's fun because it's like you look
this
at
is your ambition.
My ambition is actually to have as much fun over the course of one day as all these cosplayers seem to be having. Yeah. As I'm taking pictures, like, these people are having a great, I'm having a great time too, but it seems as though they're having a good time that's different from me taking pictures. But I have this idea that I'm going to make a suit that's made out of exactly 50% neutral gray and like printed versions of the standard like color calibration test card. And everyone's going to want to take my picture because that will be like, oh my God, if I just simply start with in Lightroom by just calibrating based on this one person's jacket and pants, every other picture taken in the same location will have perfectly balanced color.
Let's take a break. Lots more to talk about. WWDC coming up. And we'll talk more about that. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you've ever bought a house or refinanced, if you've ever gone out and gotten a mortgage, you know that there's a lot of paperwork involved. And you spend a lot of time at the loan officer's office sitting there signing things. And I'm so thrilled that there's finally a company that takes this into the 21st century, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Who was it I was talking to? Was it Brad Sams? I think it was, on Windows Weekly last week, who just refinanced his house. He said it was amazing. They did everything from the computer, or you could do it from your smartphone or tablet for that matter. And then when it came time to sign the papers, they sent them in a box. A notary arrives at your door saying, okay, let's do this. And it's done. You don't have to leave your house. You can do the whole thing without ever leaving your house. All online. It is amazing. It's fast. It's powerful. I think they chose their name aptly. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. No more searching through stacks of old files or paperwork. You can submit your pay stubs, all your information automatically online. At the touch of a button, bank statements. It's so great. And you can even do it from your iPad, sitting on the couch. I want you to check it out. QuickenLoans.com/MacBreak is our special page. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. And by the way, even if... if you're shopping for a home, a little pro tip from me. I've done this a few times now. Get pre-qualified at Rocket Mortgage, and you are a much more attractive buyer. It is a seller's market these days, at least here in our area. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, quickenloans.com/MacBreak. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, moving on. Do we see any VR or any even a tip of the hat to VR at WWDC? I mean, everybody else is showing their thing.
Tim Cook with the Apple helmet.
The Apple helmet. You know, Apple would make it look better, right? It would somehow not be so geeky.
It's so interesting to me because Apple waited 10 years to get into phones and to get into tablets, but they only waited a few years to get into watches. You know, arguably they didn't have as much time to observe other people and sort of figure out a really sharp product going in. But it was nice that they were involved in the early stages because we've all got to spend a year, growing with the Apple Watch. So do they do the same thing in VR? Do they watch the Oculus and the HTC Vive and the Galaxy Gear? And do they figure out, right now it's not a mainstream product. For the really good ones, you need a super powerful PC. You've got wires coming out of your head. You've got a big helmet on. Is that a product Apple would bring to market? Not traditionally. They might wait until there's better batteries and they're more portable and they're more elegant devices. But that's what I find so exciting about this is now with the watch, would Apple get into this so early?
And also consider the fact that Apple is able to do something that's different with the iPhone because they right now Apple has iPhone money.
Yeah,
they introduced the iPhone. They didn't have iPhone. So they also kind of had to wait 5 years to figure out where they wanted to take their shot. Now they really have the ability to say, this is our version of VR, just as they could say, this is our version of a watch. And we are going to be the company that takes 3 or 5 years to get it to exactly where we want it to go and to wait for the mainstream users to come around to our way of thinking. So there's definitely been a lot of movement in VR and Apple, particularly in the past year and a half. Whether they're going to have something to announce at WWDC, I'm not sure, because the difference between having something that looks like it's pointing towards a real thing and having even an API, let alone hardware, that they can ship is a really big thing. I think it requires a certain amount of strategy that they haven't decided upon yet. And they're also they're not so self-conscious about themselves that the fact that the Android side of things is doing so much of moving forward in VR, and they're not is going to they're not going to lose any sleep over that whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Apple might just recuse themselves in this one or leave the just say, yeah, we'll leave it to you guys. Yeah.
Well, is the helmet the product? I mean, that's one of the big questions. Is right now the obvious application for VR is a headset that you can use for entertainment and video gaming.
And Apple like doesn't that, do that, right? Apple doesn't care about that.
It's not a Apple doesn't care about chipsets. They care about feature sets. And maybe it's as simple as Apple VR is all going to be about the heads up display in the Apple car or about windows that turn into, you know, that make you forget the highway and think you're driving through Jurassic Park. I mean, there's all sorts of applications right now. We don't even think about LCD or LED or OLED as a technology. It's just it's the screens around us. It's in our watches and our phones. And maybe I mean, we saw people that do basically person in the middle attacks on the photons going into our eyes as a way to give us virtual reality images. So it's totally exciting technology, but there could be very, very different ways that it manifests itself.
Should Apple pay more attention to gaming? Historically, it's never been a great game platform. You know, thanks to Steam, at least you can, you know, there's some games, but they've always been kind of, you know, an afterthought for game developers.
I don't think it's a game that they can win the way that it's being won by other platforms. Yeah. I think that they're in a great position to win the platform of casual gaming. Like people
certainly on mobile, they're doing great. Yeah,
exactly. People who want to play puzzle games, people who want to play like arcade style vintage games, they are not going to be able to fight the fight where you have these people who are willing to spend $800 per month at least on their gaming because they will not be able to sell the sort of hardware where someone can spend $4,000 and essentially have shuttle launch capability from their living room. And that's when you're talking about someone needs to be able to drive a 4K display at 60 frames per second with zero latency, Apple would have to create an entire new company version of themselves just to get that to the market. And the people who buy that sort of stuff, they don't really care about the kind of aluminum that's used to create the cooling bridge for the CPU. They just want the frame rate. So it's not a market that I think Apple's well suited for.
So maybe that's just not going to be – they're not going to –
Yeah, it's not a failure. The fact that they're not in a certain market doesn't mean that they're failing anything. Exactly. So if they stayed out of the wearables market, if they stay out of the VR market, that doesn't mean that anybody is passing them by. There have been some people who have been, I think, a little bit too impressed by the Google I/O announcements, saying that, well, where is Apple's artificial intelligence? Where's Apple's natural language processor that's moving beyond Siri? They can do very, very well for themselves and even create new ground ahead of themselves without getting into the same spaces that everyone else is getting into. And that's despite the fact that other people are doing really wonderful work in VR. So it's not a failure for them not to bother with markets that don't personally interest them.
And who knows, in 5 years they may look back and said, oh, we dodged a bullet. That VR thing really was a waste of time.
Well, I mean, yeah, really
I think that's
that
completely possible, right?
I think about that year when I went to a Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, and it seemed as though one out of every five phones had some sort of 3D lens set up on it.
Yes.
And it's like, even then you could say that, okay, that's a nice gimmick. It's a nice party trick if you're at the bar to try to impress a person of your approved target gender with this wonderful feature of your phone. That will be a nice feature, but it went nowhere after about a year. Again, cleaning out the office, I hit the. It really is like archaeology, like in certain drawers and closets where I hit the box where I put all the stuff. I had all the stuff from like 2009 or whatever of like all the LG and Samsung devices that were sent, but they didn't want back because they canceled them after like 2 or 3 months. So I have like a collection of Android 2.2 tablets that take really, really wonky 3D pictures that you can't really do with anything. And it really is one of those Ozymandias, look upon my works, you mighty in despair sort of things.
Do you think, Renee, it's fair to say that Apple knows who it is and what it is? And I think under Steve Jobs, Apple knew what it was. It's Steve Jobs' company. But now that Apple does know who it is and is comfortable enough in their role to say, yeah, we're not going to chase the gaming market. We're not going to chase the VR market.
Yeah, Steve Jobs absolutely did that. And Tim Cook has done that very well as well. Horace Dedia coined it the Tim Cook doctrine, where he said that they look at markets and they have the luxury of a lot of money so they can investigate and prototype the heck out of these markets. But they really want to make sure that they enter markets with a lot of thought as to how they can make a difference. And for Apple, that means that they can deploy a product at scale that helps make that product mainstream and accessible to the market in a way that has never been done before. And even if it's a super interesting technology, if they can't do those things, if they can't meet those criteria, they're happy to say no. They said 1,000 no's for every yes, and that means they literally have to try 1,000 different labs and experiments and prototypes to figure out that one thing they're going to ship, like a watch or like maybe a car one day. And there's a lot of things they never ship, like television sets. And that's core to their culture. I mean, people told them if they didn't do netbooks, they'd be done. If they didn't do this or that device, they'd be done. People now, I have friends who have, you know, HTC Vive or Oculus, and they're like, this is so compelling. If Apple doesn't do this, they're done. This one's different. But everyone is different. And I think Apple, for me, the concerning part with Apple is when and if they ever did become reactionary and just start throwing out unfinished products to sort of keep up with what everybody else is doing.
I think you're right. I think that that's something very hard to do, even in a company this small. It's hard to look at something and say, is that who we are? Is that something we want to pursue?
It's FOMO.
Or not? And I think, yes, FOMO, fear of missing out. And I think if you look at Google or Microsoft, they clearly have difficult times saying, oh, no, we're not going to do that.
I disagree with that.
No, you agree.
I totally disagree with that. Yeah. There's a difference between calling your shot with a great amount of deliberation and precision and wanting to explore an unfinished product. At some point, every great idea is a lump of clay.
Right.
And you got to start thwacking at it. And you can't, and because like all art, technology is not just the thing itself, it's the interaction between that thing and its audience and its user. A play is no good if you write it and then go through 10 edits and rehearse it and then don't actually put it in front of an audience. I like Apple and Google for separate reasons. What I like about Google is that they're going to take those risks. They're going to say, this idea of having a phone that is made in components that people can simply snap together in and out as they like. We don't know if there's anything to this idea, but it's an interesting idea. Let's try to make it. And the first 10,000 people who buy it are not going to be mainstream buyers. They're going to be people who are fascinated by this idea and are willing to suffer a little along with us, or the developers, to see how well this works. And maybe it will turn out to be nothing, but we will learn a lot of stuff and we will become bigger and stronger and happier in our lives and our jobs by having done this experimental stuff and failed. There's an argument to me. There are companies that will literally, Samsung is based on the idea of, we are a manufacturing company. We are not a producer of electronics or home entertainment stuff. We are a manufacturer of things. And if there's a thing that we can manufacture, we're going to do that and try to sell it. They really are, let's throw everything against the wall and whatever sticks, we will make a version 2.0 of that. That's not what Google does. I think Google just likes to experiment. They are a university where they like to do research. Even they've had a little bit of a turnaround in the last year and a half, where now famously under the new reorganization, there has to be a plan in place where we will give you 2 years to screw around with this idea, but a couple of years after that, you have to give us a product we can sell to regular people. But it says nothing bad about them that they did Google Glass, and you don't see a Google Glass on one out of every three faces, because they learned the things they learned out of Google Glass. They are putting into all the new intelligent things they're doing right now, that they're putting into the design of Android 5 and 6. They learn from it. I would like to see Apple do more things that tell us, don't just show us things that you think will change the world. Show us things that you think are a wonderful waste of time. I would love to see the first product that I'd like to, if they had their 20% thing where you are allowed to do, spend 20% of your time, one out of every 3 years, doing something profoundly silly and wonderful that you're excited about. And I would like to see a half hour of every public event given over to at least three of these wonderfully, heroically silly, but incredible ideas.
Google pays a little bit of a price, though, for that, looking like they're dilettantish and willing to cancel stuff, even if somebody likes it.
Never read the comments.
Yeah, it's well.
No,
I
feel that way. Whether it's a, I mean, I don't have to look at somebody's comments to feel that way. I'm a little gun shy whenever Google announces a new product about jumping on it because I've been burnt so many times. So there is a consequence to doing that. I agree with you. There's something beneficial to doing it. It's just two different ways of doing it.
Like, yeah. We benefit from having both approaches. Like the Googles and the Samsungs will put a lot of things in the field, and then Apple will take its time. Mostly will take its time and put out a very coherent version of it that doesn't have all the features. But Apple could not do what they do without all the market research done by the companies who do go to market faster. And a lot of, well, people will say this company is copying this or that from Apple. That's the return price they pay. Apple does the research and comes up with a very simplified version, and then that informs the next iterations of those products.
Very different
and
it's ways incredibly, of doing business, yeah.
It's an incredibly symbiotic relationship. And when you say Apple should do that, like, you know, Andy's doing it in a very rational way, but some people just say Apple has to do moonshots or Google has to learn to focus. That's not how those cultures work. It's sort of like saying Renee has to have everything in his house that Andy has in his house.
Right.
We're very different. Everything about us is different, and that's reflected in how we work. And it's good that we have these sort of differences. And Johnny Ive, like he once said, and I thought it was a really good statement. And Johnny Ive actually, like he talks the way he talks on video. That's just Johnny Ive. Was that, you know, he can create all these products and he can put them out on market, but it's not until he sees how people use and interact with them that they become real. That he starts to understand what they mean, and then they iterate from there. And that's the same approach. They just sort of take it a little bit further down the line of where they see the product before they introduce it. So both approaches, I think, are super valuable for us as consumers.
So it's probably safe to say that this is not in Apple's future. The backpack computer, this is one of the many computers being shown at Computex in Taipei today. These are designed for virtual reality helmets. It's a computer you wear on a backpack. Okay,
look, what if we do a case mod so it looks like the Rocketeer's rocket pack?
It kind of does.
I would definitely go for it.
This is the HP Omen X. Omen, my friends, it's a PC, VR PC. This is a development kit. That's actually, the Omen is pretty nice. This is the MSI.
No VGA ports, doomed.
No, it's all HDMI because, of course, it's designed for using with a Vive.
But imagine this like ruggedized, made out of like a Panasonic Toughbook, and imagine an architect, a building director, and a couple investors walking through an empty field, and saying, "Here is what the complex is going to look like."
With
and
now your virtual reality helmet
let's,
on. Yeah.
Let's walk from the parking lot to the main building. Mm. Oh, actually, you know what? I really love that clump of trees over there. Why don't we just walk around the trees instead of driving? Technology at this stage is invigorating because you could do anything with it. There's not been the rule books set yet that if you want to make money with a virtual reality rig, here are the people who are buying it, and so here's what they want you to make with it. It's like, no, you can just think that, wouldn't it be nice if we could do this? Wouldn't it be nice to, I'm sure that artists and sculptors have not been saying, I wish I could spend $5,000 for a magic wand so that I could do 3D 3D sculptures made out of light that I have to be wearing a $3,000 thing on my face to even see, and I can't display it anywhere. But let's build that right now. Since there's no one buying it, let's build it. It will be awesome. And the people who get to use it will get so excited by this technology that they'll have ideas of their own. And 10 years from now, the people who are ancient and old, because now they're 40 instead of 30, will not be able to imagine what the 20-year-olds are coming up with when they start to have their minds warped by this from an early, early age. This is why virtual reality is incredibly wonderful, not because it's commercial, but because it is just a grove of trees. And we're about to set off in front of there, and we could find damn near anything inside that forest.
I love this article. Ben Einstein, who is a product designer and now a VC at Bolt VC. No, you can't manufacture that like Apple does. A word of warning to startups, hardware startups, who say, you know, we want to do it just like Apple does. He says, Apple can do it because they're Apple. Apple is an exception to nearly every rule, he says. What happened when Apple wanted a CNC machine, a million MacBook bodies a year, those aluminum, you know, unibodies? Yeah. They bought 10,000 CNC machines to do it. When they wanted to drill laser holes in MacBook Pros for the sleep light, but only one company made a machine that could drill those 20 micrometer holes in aluminum, it bought the company and took all the inventory. So he said, here's what you should, as a startup, don't be putting this in your pitch deck, kids. White plastic. No. White is often the most difficult color to mold. If you need to use white, never have two separately molded white-on-white parts. Even Apple learned this when they wanted to make a white iPhone. Remember, it was delayed.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they, but then they solved it, right? And just because Apple has doesn't mean you can. CNC machining at scale. It's fantastic for prototypes, pretty awesome for high-margin parts like hip implants and turbine blades. Not for consumer devices. Figure out a way to cast your metal parts. Don't look at what Apple's doing. Don't look at that. Laser-drilled holes. Invisible laser-drilled holes are far more difficult to make than it may seem. You can usually accomplish a similar look and feel without the complex secondary operation if you're willing to sacrifice a bit. Molded plastic packaging. Harder and more expensive than you might think. Recycled cardboard is your friend. No ejector pin marks. Unless you're a billionaire genius, your product will have noticeable ejector pin marks. Apple does it. Embrace the marks, my friends. Most consumers don't know what the hell an ejector pin mark is anyway. But this is my favorite one. Four-color, double-walled, matte boxes with HD foam inserts.
Yep.
Of course, Apple's boxing is amazing. You don't even want to throw them away. He says, I know you're going to do this anyways, but be prepared. These kinds of boxes will literally be the most expensive line item on your bill of materials. It's not unusual for them to cost upward of $12 each at scale. At scale! And then they get thrown away. I love this. No disagreement, I imagine, from either of you on his points.
Apple's brilliant because that's really part of their brand. It's part of the experience of owning an Apple product. And it's not as though any of the competing makers are wrong by putting a headphone jack in a device or having an eject hole, because people are not going to make a buying decision based on, oh my god, that look at that SIM ejector pin hole. Like I almost want to throw up on the device and would actually improve it because it would cover up that ejector pin hole. But nonetheless, I have a pile of boxes that are worthy of keeping.
And, yeah, but they're just boxes.
Apple boxes are, I found myself holding this thing and saying, am I really going to do this? It's not just the box that my Apple Watch came in, but the protective outer brown cardboard box that the box was shipped in is in itself one of the best plain cardboard recyclable brown boxes I've ever seen. I am not joking when I say that I would love to spend, if I had a choice between five Apple executives and just whoever it is who's in charge of designing and arranging Apple boxes, I can, if you name the top five Apple executives, I think that I would say no to two of them if I could get an hour with the box designer instead.
Johnny starts with Johnny, right? And it started actually with Steve, who said, let's really pay attention to this.
And they have an incredible Marcoms department that does a lot of that stuff.
Really? That's a marketing. Yeah. Of course it is, right?
You hold the box upside down. About like no pressure on the sides, really no pressure on the bottom. And there's such a tight seal that air cannot get out of it. It will not open. Yeah. And you're like, and even when you see, oh, here it is, it's about to fall. All that happened was that like one edge of it like shifted maybe 2 millimeters, but the tolerances are so tight that now that 1 millimeter made it jam now, and it will not. Oh my goodness. I have so much respect for putting so much work into something that someone is going to save, but they're not going to really be interacting with it 60 times a day like they are with a phone.
It makes me feel guilty. I break down Apple boxes all the time, and I feel so like I'm not going to keep them. It's a box.
eBay them. I bet you can eBay.
Apparently, people do eBay them.
I have a collection. If you need,
I hate throwing them out. I feel guilty because they are beautiful. But at the end of the day, they're just the box.
I just know that if I ever throw one away, the device is going to have a problem. I'm going to be asked to send it back. I'm going to scramble for a box.
No, but that's the problem is Apple has never asked me for the box, ever. You bring it to the store, they don't say, where's the box?
No.
By the way, there's a great passage in Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs where they talk about this. And Johnny Ive's talking about it, and Steve's saying, you know, we want to make the first experience of the device a moment. And the way to do that is present it in the packaging. And so it's all designed around this theatrics of the first time you see your new loved one in the box.
That is an important thing. I wonder if they would consider extending that to even like the in-store purchase bit. The only I have now bought two, maybe three MacBooks in Apple stores, and they've always been let's call it one more because my iPad Pro cost $1,000. I've always felt a little bit let down that they didn't even have me walk more than 8 feet into the store. I was met at the door because it's time for me to either buy or pick up the thing that I ordered, and it was it's a 13-inch MacBook Pro. So $2,200, and yes, it's all right. Just wait right here, and then they call into the radio and make small talk with me for a minute and a half, and then I'm handed a plastic bag, a nice plastic bag with the $2,200 computer, and I'm on my way. And it's nice and efficient, but I don't want to be sat down and being given cocoa and pet and finger sandwiches. But I just bought something for $2,200, man. Do I get to sit down? When I got my Google Glass,
can I have a cup of tea, please?
For my Google Glass, it was much less expensive than that, and it was a concierge experience where someone was assigned to me for 45 minutes to walk me through it and demonstrate it and fit it and Coke in real glass bottles that was served. I buy table bottle service, and it's like I feel like okay. I feel not quite so bad about spending $1,500 on a beta product now because I feel as though they're making me feel okay. Well, that's at least worth a bottle of Coke that cost us 89 cents at Costco. Yeah. So I would like them to at least here is the pickup experience is if you'd like to sit and wait. We also have again here's a moist towelette. Something.
I do admit that I have yelled at producers who have opened the packages for me for products to review, saying, no, yes. that's not your job. Let me open my own gosh darn packages. On the other hand, I kind of wish Apple would at least give you it feels very, I don't know, it feels a little high-end and kind of rude. I wish they'd give you a choice of, as Amazon, for instance, does, of can I just have it in, like, recyclable, inexpensive
folded newspaper packaging. For you, LaPorte. Here you go.
Wrap it in a newspaper. I'll take it because I feel...
Fish and chips, MacBook,
I feel it's a little ostentatious almost. And it's very much, you know, a consumption thing, you know. It's not like you buy a laptop every
It's meant to be a moment of zen.
The theme of a lot of the shows that we do is that aren't we happy that there's so many different approaches from company to company?
True.
I like the fact that there are other companies that are Amazon packages and stuff generally in corrugated boxes, even the Fire tablets. And it seems to say, we know that you will enjoy, if we spent an extra $10 on this box, you would have enjoyed it. It would have made you feel good for about 12 seconds.
Right.
And then you throw it away. You'd much rather have the extra $12 to spend on books and music or maybe a burrito. So I'm glad that there are these other...
There's a choice.
You look at a Nexus phone, yeah. When you look at a Nexus 5X compared to an iPhone 6, it's hard to say that the iPhone 6 is objectively a better phone, even though it costs $200 or $300 more than the 5X. They did things like instead of a really beautiful aluminum body, it's a plastic body, but a really, really well done plastic body. Instead of things being done where you can't see a single seam anywhere, okay, if you want to look, okay, yes, there's a seam here and there, but we know that you're probably going to be putting it in a protective rubber case anyway, so there goes the advantage of the seam. So I like the fact that there are different approaches to different models.
Likewise.
So just to prove that Apple isn't perfect, Ben.
Apple like Music. We're about to talk about Apple Music, aren't we?
No, actually, we're going to talk about Apple Pay. Ben Thompson made an interesting point on the talk show, on Gruber's talk show last week. He's saying Apple blew a massive opportunity to promote Apple Pay better last fall. Merchants across the U.S., of course, had to upgrade their point-of-sale hardware to support PIN and this new system. Gene Munster, and by the way, this Philip Elmer DeWitt has combined these two facts. It did some calculations. He thinks, now we know Gene sometimes gets things wrong, but he thinks that only about 20% of new iPhones have activated Apple Pay. There's also, of course, the anecdotal evidence that you just don't see people, not just Apple Pay, but any touch to pay, you just don't see people using those systems very often. And so the question is, Was it a missed opportunity for Apple? Should they have, you know, taken advantage of this great liability shift and got more Apple? Because I'm sure it would agree with this. If you're using the card with the new chip and PIN system or the chip and sign system, it's not convenient. You have to put the card in and leave it in, and it takes a while. It's slow, and Apple Pay is much faster. You've been doing it for a long time, but so. You know, I now understand maybe your enthusiasm for Apple Pay, because for us, a swipe of a card isn't the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah, we still have to use chip and PIN for tips because Tap to Pay doesn't have a tipping system yet. So if you had a restaurant or any other place that expects gratuities, there's just no Tap and Pay system for that. So you're still doing PIN and chip. And we've just gotten so used to it because it's been 5-10 years. It's just like I've never signed anything, so I barely remember it. But you know, Ben has a really good point, but it goes back to that culture thing. Apple did miss an opportunity, but Apple was not culturally positioned to take advantage of that. Apple has always been we'll take care of the top line and the bottom line will sort of take care of itself. And you've seen that, like Apple has a handful of evangelists. When BlackBerry 10 launched, I think they had 300. Microsoft has had, you know, dozens and hundreds of evangelists. They just put a lot of boots on the ground, and Apple historically has not done that. So a non-Apple company might have hired just dozens and dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of people to go literally store to store and to have signs ready for them and branding and training and all of these things. And it's the same thing we've heard. Like Apple Music, they might have hired marketing assistants to actually sit with every star and help them, you know, do Connect for at least 6 months on a day-to-day basis to launch it. But it's just not something, I don't even think Apple thinks about that stuff. Or if they do, it's not at a level where they believe they can implement it, because that would require a very different sort of mindset. So absolutely a blown opportunity, but it's just, that's technically the way Apple does it. HomeKit too, they have a really good program, but there's nobody out there with manufacturers really giving them the marketing, doing the stickers, doing the awareness, going around showing people whatever health HomeKit can do. Alternatively, I go to the mall and there's a Samsung kiosk up there with people just walking by trying to show you their latest product.
It's kind of ironic. Apple invented product evangelism with Guy Kawasaki many moons ago.
One guy, right.
It was easier then. It was a small
BlackBerry evangelist.
It was a smaller market. You agree, Andy? Did Apple miss an opportunity?
I don't know. I think that they did a much better job than Google and other manufacturers did, because
because Android Pay was out a long time before Apple Pay, right?
Exactly.
Nobody even knew it existed.
I'm always amused and debased to admit that I used Google Wallet on my Nexus 5 phone that had NFC and worked with Tap to Pay, and would have worked on every single one of these stores that I was testing out Apple Pay on. And it wasn't until Apple Pay came out that reminded me that, oh, this thing exists and I can actually use it on my day-to-day Android phone. So I don't. And the other problem I have, the other thing is that I'm wondering how much more they could have done to get the word out about it. It'd be nice if every single person who owns an iPhone was using Tap to Pay, or were using all the capabilities of their device. It would be wonderful if people were to switch phones because they love this feature that they think is only available on this one device. But it's difficult when you have to face the fact that people who own iPhones are just one section of the entire community of people who spend money on things. If you spend more time on noticing the devices that people are using on subways, on commuter rail, on buses, in universities, and everywhere that people hang out, you will see that the iPhone is probably the most noticeable phone out there, but it's only part of that ecosystem up there. There's a limit to how much of the people spending money market that they can actually capture. I think they did a great job. I think that as more people start to age out and into the system, more people are going to be using Tap to Pay. I think just the simple thing of being behind somebody who drops their one out of every five times that I use Tap to Pay on my Android phone, I wind up evangelizing the concept to the people behind me, because they see me just drop the phone like on top of the pad at the drugstore, at the pharmacy, and just do nothing. And then when I hear a beep, I just pluck it off of there. and say, what did you just do? I just paid. Oh, can I look at my phone? What kind of phone do you have? I have. Oh, yep, that's right. That's a built-in feature. You just I think you'd much rather pay for that yogurt that's about to go bad if I'm going to tell you the entire history of contactless payments. But believe me, if you were to do a Google search for the name of your phone and contactless payments, you will learn that it's a scene, man. You should.
It may
do that.
Be that we're just old habits die hard, and we're just not that interested. I don't know if that's fully Apple's fault.
That's it too. People, credit cards that work fine, cash works fine. You have to identify a pain point for people where they feel as though, my God, it's such a horrible breach of my time and my patience to have to actually hold out a $20 bill and get change back.
Yeah, exactly.
I use it all the time because I just like it. It's less fuss. It's more secure. I like the fact that I get digital receipts that are a lot easier to track for me than of course using cash. But if it's working for other people, you're telling, please abandon this thing that you're using, that you trust, that you know, to something that you don't necessarily trust yet. And you have to, there's always that 0.75 to 1.3 seconds where you're not 100% sure that the payment system is going to go through, because it's just that pause where, oh my God, is this like a kiosk where it has the logo on the reader but they don't have the software turned on? Am I going to look like an idiot because I just put my phone in this thing expecting magic to happen? So yeah,
I have some touch to pay system on me at all times. I rarely use it. I mean, this Samsung Pay even works with swipe machines, and I still rarely use it. It's just
that
like
one I don't trust.
I just swipe.
I use it all the time now because I'm so paranoid that all my credit cards and debit cards have had tap to pay for 5 years, and my greatest fear is I will drop it at a gas station and pay for gas for the next 7 or 10 people in line.
Right.
So this to me is so much better because it's either my thumbprint or my pulse, and if it loses either of those things, it no longer works. And that to me is just much more secure.
Oh, I mean, there's no question it's better and more secure. It's just not better enough. And that's why I thought maybe Canadians and others who have to do the, have had to do the dip and chip thing.
Maybe for you,
it's just a little bit more of a hurdle to not use Apple Pay. Maybe that's enough to push you into it. But
our problem was the banks. The banks took it forever. Three banks have started adopting it. My bank hasn't. So I have my, I have the American Express, but most places here don't take American Express tap. So three banks have started. Another three banks are going to start mid-June, and then we'll see. But it's still at the point where, I mean, McDonald's takes it. A bunch of other places takes it. And when I use it, they're still, oh, my God, I've never seen that before. That's the coolest thing in the world. Yeah. But until it becomes routine, then it's not really part of mainstream culture.
And who wants to have that conversation? do you think in 10 years we'll all just use tap to pay and that'll be that? And it was just, you know, it just took a while.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay.
Remember that we're so beholden to that first generation that grew up with a technology, that once we have the first generation that when they have their first bank account that they're used to simply pay, that's how you buy things that cost less than $40. You always just take out your phone to pay for it. This is why this is the first generation that really understood the capabilities of messaging on a smartphone and why you weren't limited to voice and text. It became part of their lifestyle because that's how they learned how to talk to each other. So
no, it's true. When credit cards first came out, nobody used them. When ATMs first emerged, nobody used them. I remember I was kind of I used home banking on Bank of America when it was a 20x40 display with black white text on a black screen, even though I was using a graphical, you know, I was using a Mac, and I used it. And it just takes a while. That's all. Now everybody does, you know, ATMs and.
I had relatives who would not use online banking, and then very slowly they got an online banking, but then they would print everything out because they were just used to having a paper copy. And they didn't want to not get the paper bills in the mail because they thought that they would miss them. But then they heard this report about identity theft, people stealing the paper bills, and then that scared them into going fully online. It took something that really made them afraid to get that point of transition going.
And we're all like that. There was for years I wouldn't deposit. Every time I wanted to deposit a check, I had to go to a teller to do it because I didn't. There was something about feeding it into the ATM and simply here is a number on the screen that says that we have recognized this as a check that I didn't like. And now I'm sort of trying to get my head around the idea: should I use the phone feature to deposit checks?
That's how I deposit my checks.
I'm not quite there yet.
You know what happened? My bank. I bank with USAA, and they used to, if it was more than, what was it, 5,000? I can't remember what it was. There was a limit. If it was a large check, you had to bring it somewhere. In my case, the UPS store to deposit it. So I would make a monthly trip to the UPS store to deposit my paycheck. And just like a month ago, I went to the UPS store. They said, no, wait, they turned it off.
Yeah.
I said, what? Oh, that's a pain. Now what do I have to do, mail it to Texas? And they said, no, no, they raised the ante. Now I can deposit up to $100,000 via a picture on my phone. I don't know what the holdup was. A picture's a picture, right? It's still, when you cash a check,
I just have such sympathy for those people who didn't understand ATMs and credit cards, because it's like, wait a minute. So the same mechanism I use to take a picture of my hoagie and put it on Instagram will take this thousands of dollars that I have and actually turn it into,
bank or you take the picture. It's the same either way. It's still a picture of a check that's going out to the whoever it is, the clearance house. All right. Anyway, let's take a break. More to talk about. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. How's that Apple Talk podcast going these days? Going well?
Oh, yeah, really great. We just had Carolina Milanese, who was at Google I.O., to talk about digital assistants and the difference between those with personality and without, with APIs and without, with international and without. And we should be doing VR this week.
Very interesting.
Should be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it strikes me with the progress that we're making. Google's trying this out in the South Bay. We won't need a watch or a phone or a credit card. It'll just see you, and it'll use whatever cues it uses to, because it's all about authentication. They'll say, oh, hi, Leo.
I'm wearing my Nixon mask right now.
Right. Google has a thing where you just say your initials. This is only at McDonald's and IHOP or something in the South Bay, in Silicon Valley, next in Mountain View. But you just say, they say, okay, what are your initials? LGL. Okay, fine. You're done.
Yeah. My voice is my passport.
Right.
It sees your phone in your pocket and realizes that they can authenticate the actual device itself.
Isn't it amazing? But that's really the end game. All of this is intermediate technology.
Yeah.
The perfect Google product is at the precise intersection point between amazing, and miraculous, creepy. Near magic, and creepy. Exactly. That's the exact point. Those two
you really want that? You really want Google's that?
We go right up to the creepy line, but stop.
RR. Renee, do you really want another hamburger? Oh, I'm sorry, Google. I'll leave now.
And I do use, somebody's pointing out, you can now use voice or facial recognition to log into your banking app on your phone. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah.
Andy Inocco is also here. He does a podcast called Material where he does talk about Google on Replay. Is it replay.fm?
Replay.fm.
Yeah.
No static at all.
No
Relay.
Static at all.
Oh, sorry, relay. Sorry, relay.
FM. Oh, crap. Okay, now I got the FM right, but I got the relay part
wrong. Didn't want Mike Hurley coming after us.
That was I know. No, relay.fm and Material podcast all about Google. That must be disorienting for people who are used to you on Mac Break Weekly all of a sudden.
Well, it's kind of fun because we record both shows in the same day. So it's nice that while we're recording Mac Break, there'll be tweets like, oh, my God, what Apple? Andy is such an Apple hater. Why is he on the Mac show? And then I'll be recording Material. My God, Apple's such a Google hater. He's always talking about Apple. Why is he on a Google show?
Which
means that I'm doing fine. No, I'm
saying
that's
Leo's life and welcome to it.
You're walking the fine line between creepy and cool. That's all you got to do in life. Yep. We'll have more in just a bit. If you're a magazine fan, magazines, I think, are still the last bastion of really great print journalism. With all due respect to the Chicago Sun-Times, the fine newspaper you work for, I don't know how. I guess the big newspapers will survive, but I hope there's always a Vanity Fair and a Rolling Stone and a Wired, and these magazines are so great. There's almost every month there's an article I want to read in the New Yorker, every week in the New Yorker, a photo essay I want to see in National Geographic. The problem is if you were to subscribe to all of these, not only would the cost be out of control, but you'd have paper everywhere. Your coffee table would break with the burden. And if I feel guilty recycling boxes, imagine how I feel throwing out 100 magazines every month. You could buy it on the newsstand. That'd just talk about cost going through the roof. That'd be crazy. So here's what I recommend and what I use now, and I love it. It's called Texture, and it's like Netflix for magazines. You can binge read. Really great if you travel, because instead of bringing a half dozen magazines with you, you bring your iPad or your iPhone or your tablet, and you've got it. And by the way, all the magazines, I mean everything, it's fantastic. Men's Health and Wired and Interviewed and The New Yorker and Vogue and Esquire. And what's nice is I probably would never get Vogue, ever. But there's something in there that I would enjoy, you know? Rolling Stone. I know there's always one article I want to read every month. People Magazine. I know I feel guilty buying it, but don't you want to know Steve Harvey's story from homeless to $100 million? You do want to know that. I know you do. And see, this way you can read it kind of surreptitiously. And if your spouse comes in the room, you just jump back to Wired Magazine. Sports Illustrated, everything. And then this is every page in the current issue, every page, and back issues, and stuff that you don't get in the magazine, like bonus content like video. So this is such a good deal. One flat rate, all the magazines. You can find new stuff, too, with their top stories and new and noteworthy sections. These are curated by actual human beings. Editorial team is really good there, and you can really get deep into subjects or people. Star your favorite magazines. That adds them instantly to your personal library, so you're always ready to read. I want you to try it free right now. Texture, T-E-X-T-U-R-E, Texture. Get it, texture.com/MacBreak, and get that free trial today. I think you're going to love it. It really is a great solution. If you like magazines, and I'm glad magazines still exist. Did you ever write for magazines, Andy?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, one of the most fun interactions I ever had was I was selling a lot of features to Playboy, and my mom didn't know how to express her pride in that.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, but they were absolutely hands down one of the best magazines I ever wrote for.
You've written articles for Playboy? Wow.
I've had artwork published in Playboy. That's on my article where I needed to explain something very, very technical, and I decided I still have the artwork upstairs somewhere where I just basically decided to do a cartoon explaining how it worked. I talked to it with my editors. Oh, well, if you just like do it like in stick figures or something,
we'll get an illustrator to do it. Yeah,
we'll do it. So I basically cartooned the whole thing, and they said, actually, our illustrator will just trace over this in Illustrator. Oh, no, nice. Illustrator. And so I could say I've had my artwork published in Playboy.
No, there's certain things. If you're a writer, you know, getting published in there's certain like New Yorker. Playboy's absolutely on that list of like super prestigious. You're up there with Norman Mailer kind of life also, goals. I think that's fantastic. I had no idea.
Also the editing process there really does feel like this is what it must have been like in the 60s to be like Gates or something because the back and forth between the editor and the real sacredness of every sentence. And then this is the first and only time I was writing for a magazine that had like 100 like international editions, because number one, they would pay me a great amount of money for this feature article, and then for the next 4 months there'd be other huge checks. We sold it to the English edition, we sold it to the French edition, we sold it to the Dubai edition, we sold it to the Brazilian edition decided to take your article too. And it's like, my God, it's every writer's dream to get paid for stuff that you didn't technically have to write or translate yourself.
It's nice. Anyway. Those were the days. And of course, Andy, the 1974 Gatefold. I think Mr. May in Playboy magazine.
That was a lot of waxing, but you know what? They made me feel like I could really express that side of myself. It was a place of peace and safety. And
yeah.
I'm just glad that they got me when I was 23.
That's how I got started in this business, was writing. I think my first piece was in either InfoWorld or Byte. And it was and then I wrote some Atari magazine pieces too. But I felt pretty good when I got a piece in Byte magazine. I felt like I'm done.
Oh yeah, my first published anything was in Soft Talk magazine, the Apple II magazine.
Yeah,
and that was just like a contest entry that they summarize. And was imagine like being like in junior high and seeing your name in this magazine that you run to the mailbox to get every single month. And then I shouldn't give short shrift. My first real work was at Mac User. Started my first stuff in 1989. I remember it was 1989 because they gave me a column, and I remember it was 1989 because real optimistic guy thinking, okay, well, if it takes them columns for the editors to find out I'm a total fraud, I can at least put Mac User Magazine columnist 1989 through 1990 on the resume, and they don't know it was just October, November, December, January. By the way, yes. Magazines. Yay, magazines.
Yay, magazines. Moving on. iPhone error 53 plaintiffs.
No.
Not going to talk about it. Not going to talk about it. What's the upshot on the bricking? Speaking of errors, error 56?
Yeah, special order 56. Kill all the stormtroopers.
Did the Apple update the iOS update?
Yeah, they pulled it, and then they released a new version.
Okay. And nobody's getting bricked. I put it on my iPad Pro, no problem.
The 9.7 inch specifically, and it generated a hardware error, so I'm not quite sure what that was.
I put it on my 9.7 before I read that, and I didn't have a problem.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay. So, whatever, it's fixed
now. It's always a small percentage of users, but at Apple scale, that is millions of users.
Yeah, right, exactly. Fox
cares about.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so who cares if it's millions of people, if it's you?
That's all it takes.
Yes.
Just one. Foxconn is replacing 60,000 workers with robots. I don't know if they'll be making iPhones. Foxconn, of course, is the... does Foxconn make all the iPhones?
I think so. There's another supplier that occasionally does Apple orders, but I think Foxconn gets this lion's share of them most of the time.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that? On the one hand, you know, we've been complaining about difficult working conditions, child labor, whatever, suicides at Foxconn. Now they're going to use robots. Was it worse having a low-paying, horrible job, but at least you had a job?
Well now your job is to run the robots.
Oh, yeah. There's four people to run the robots. Right.
But also, to be fair, a lot of this work can't be done by humans anymore. It can only be done by humans supervising robots now.
Right.
So, and particularly when you're talking about the, imagine Apple is just one company. We're not just talking about Foxconn's just making Apple products. But if you imagine the tens of millions of iPhones that Apple makes that each have to be made and assembled, how many people can you possibly hire to keep up with that kind of demand without automating the crap out of it?
Right.
So, in principle, I don't think that I don't like automation as a cost cutting measure, but I do recognize there are times where you can't just simply be on the be on a campaign speech say I will talk to these people and make them not hire robots or at least make them use American robots to assemble things. Sometimes you have to say, well, look at the components that are on a phone and say, imagine somebody having to take a one-fourth of a grain of rice and glue it with conductive adhesives in exactly the right place at the right time 10,000 times a day. No.
Any iPhone 7 rumors we want to disseminate that are worthy of...
Always. I mean, four speakers, different colors.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. Yeah, blah, blah. There is a Chinese accessory maker showing a prototype for lightning to phono jack, mini jack.
That's never of any use whatsoever. Every time you see a rumor of this kind, remember that it's the company announcing to other distributors, we will have the ability to build this when this thing needs to be built. It's not we have seen a design and now we're making plans based on the design. It's saying we will be able to in 2 weeks' time have working product in a store shelves. So by all means, if you're planning on stocking such an item or carrying such an item in your catalog, keep us in mind because this is the sort of stuff we make. So the phone cases are probably the absolute worst source of Apple rumors. Right. The next bad source is usually an analyst without a really proven track record. But then the next one above that is iPhone case manufacturers. It's more like I tuned a radio to a place on the dial that was kind of close to the station, but not really, and listened to it for 10 minutes, and that's the quality of the information you're getting.
Well, there was the one that went out of business when they went all in on those teardrop shaped cases the 5 or 5S.
But I think I'm going to credit the rumor that they are dropping the headphone port, right? Or is that still very speculative? It feels like that might really be.
Until they hold it up on stage, Leo, everything is speculative.
Everything's speculative. But I could see that happening.
I can say that I believe there to be very serious discussions about that far beyond the, hey, of course, Apple checks out every right. single possible idea. That said, though, I like Renee say, you believe it when you actually see Tim Cook holding it up and not making sure it's not a joke item that's supposed to spout confetti from it, saying, oh, of course, we would never build something like this with no headphone jack. No, come on. Let's bring out the real one.
We do know that Apple wants to put Siri in the next version of OS 10 so that you can talk mm-hmm. to your computer. You know, I already have that in Windows, and I find that I don't use it all that often. Because, you know, when you're using a computer in an office or whatever, you're not likely to talk out loud to it. You're more likely to use a keyboard and mouse. However, we also know that Google has announced an Amazon Echo-like product, Google Home. Some rumors that Apple might be looking at something like that. 9 to 5 Mac says that it could be related to the Apple TV. Apple TV could be home for rumored Amazon Echo-like Siri speaker. VentureBeat says a source has indicated a new version of Apple TV might be a competitor for
that.
Maybe
a Mac with Siri could be a competitor, too, if you just happen to have one in your living room. I mean, Apple has a multi-device strategy that I really like, because that way you have your assistant at home. And
the Echo, though, I mean, part of the secret sauce of the Echo is some specialized microphones that are that
beamforming.
Yeah.
It's 7 microphones are arranged all the way around the thing. And also, really, a lot of it is concept, where here is a discrete device that is powered on all the time and is placed someplace prominently. It's not something where you have to hold down a button to make it work. It's not something where you have to be near where this computer is to make it work. It's not mixed in with a device that does 18 different things, including being an Apple TV. It is like, here is a dedicated appliance that here is an entity that will then listen to my instructions and act on those instructions. Even Cortana on Windows, I think it's successful because they really have promoted it not as, hey, we've added something to this, or we've taken something that's available on one of our other products and we've put it into the desktop. It's no, this is really a core feature of this thing. This is a core part of our interface to Windows 10. I'm not sure how well Siri would work conceptually if I know that if I hold down the function key, I can speak something. Really, I have a Alexa in the next room, and the number of times where I have an actual keyboard underneath my fingers, or I've got an actual iPad like underneath my hands, and I have to do nothing but simply say, trigger word, what time is it right now in Chicago, or what's the weather right now, or add this to my calendar. Or actually, I was watching Columbo this morning, and I say, when was she born? And again, I have an iPad in my lap. I can actually just hold down the home button and ask Siri this question, but I'm just used to simply doing nothing but asking a question as though my spouse is in the next room and she knows everything and she's tolerant of my just simply barking out questions and giving me answers. So it's not just the technology of parsing speech. It's also understanding the way that people want to interact with such a thing. And the right answer might be a dedicated device that just simply always exists.
And to kind of tie this all together, we had a really good conversation. It's not out yet, on a podcast with Nitin Ganatra and Don Melton again, and they were talking about Apple and NFC chips and how for years Apple was experimenting with NFC. And Scott Forstall said, you know, this is a chip, not a feature. And even like Oppenheimer, who was the CFO at the time, said, you know, just the stuff isn't there for it yet. And they took a couple of years, and eventually they didn't really ship NFC. They shipped Apple Pay. And so, you know, you look at Apple working on a hub, one of the Apple TV took years to get out, and they were like PVR versions and they were hub versions. And there were rumors for years about Apple building a device that would just sit there and, you know, stage downloads for you and do all sorts of convenient stuff for you and be the real HomeKit hub. Instead, we got the Apple TV we got now. So this stuff is sort of, when you see these rumors, Apple's always working on these things. If we can talk about it on a show or someone can blog it on the internet, a company with billions and billions of dollars can absolutely afford to prototype it. It's always just a question of when they go to market with it and how and what form it takes.
There is a rumor CNET is promulgating that there might even be a camera in a Echo competitor from Apple. This is all
in Prime Sense.
Who knows? Although I have ordered and I hope to get it sometime. I don't know. I gave them $800 a couple of years ago, so I hope to get it sometime soon. This Jibo thing, which has a camera and a screen in it, and it's very much like an Echo in the sense that you talk to it, it talks to you, but it also will take pictures of you and has some personality and so forth. I could see this as a breakthrough product for Apple, couldn't you? I mean, if you're exploring breakthrough areas.
I don't see
the Nuance version had cameras and beamforming mics, and you would snap twice, and it would lock on you, and then you could talk while going through a crowded room full of noisy people, and it would only identify your voice. But that's a lot of technological overhead for a home hub.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't see that kind of device until they got some sort of side rail ion and propulsion engines so that it could actually hover and follow you around silently. I don't see the idea of so long as you're within line of sight of this device, it can turn its head and aim its camera at you. I really don't see the idea. I don't see the plus of having a camera equipped on one of these devices unless you're building it as a chat thing and else has the ability to really steer you steer itself around and follow you for conferencing thing. Even so, I just don't see it as a useful feature right now.
Even if you were a very lonely 8-year-old girl who didn't have any friends, but had a sleepover with
Does
your
it
little
sound like Scarlett Johansson?
Friendly robot.
That's a great demo video, but this is the sort of thing you design when you're creating a movie, and you can create any sort of technology, right, and it has to look exact. People have to be able to figure out what this thing is for immediately. They don't figure out that your hypothetical 8-year-old lonely girl will find a community of other 8 to 10-year-old girls online, and they don't need a little robot that swivels its head that it can pretend that this little robot pal is her friend. She can find actual friends anywhere in the world and talk about things that are relevant to actually.
This internet, is there anything it can't do? Anyway, I hope you're all wrong, and when I get my Jibo, you're going to be so jealous.
It's a Cabbage Patch Kid, but with interactive AI.
Apple considered, according to 9 to 5 Mac, buying Time Warner last year.
Not true. There you go.
The end of that one. It's not true. It's wrong.
Not true.
This is from the Financial Times. Eddie Q raised the idea at a meeting with Time Warner's head of corporate strategy, Olaf Olafsson.
Now you could easily see Eddie Q going, "Well, you what know, if we you guys bought you? We'll just buy you." But right. I mean, that is a negotiation tactic, not an offer on the table.
Yeah, we could just buy you. All right. By the way, worth about because it's not just Time Warner, but it's HBO and CNN.
I think they took one look at their DC billion. Comics movies and just said pass, hard pass.
Okay.
My understanding is it's not true. I mean, I could always be wrong.
Renee, I'm biting my tongue here because we can have a long discussion about, I think that the Marvel movies are like the Android.
Oh, I thought it was about the Time Warner thing. You guys are fighting over comic books.
Let me complete my thought because I want Renee to be properly insulted. That the Marvel movies are the ones that make kajillions of dollars and own the has the greatest market share, but they're not really all that good. They're not well made. There's not that craftsmanship. You'll see
Deadpool was very good.
Well, that was
Deadpool.
Fox,
Deadpool was the best, maybe the best Marvel movie ever.
Yeah.
Okay. But early Spider-Man, early X-Men, but
yeah. But you're right. Most of them right now feel like cynical attempts to cash in on the market.
I just want a fun movie. They don't have to be works of art, but a glowery Superman is lost on me. So glowery.
I just want a reason why Iron Man has a Hulkbuster armor and why he's suddenly fighting the Hulk after they were just working together, and just at least put something in there that says, here's what we... It's not just because we knew this would look good in the trailer, and also we need another smashy-bashy. We had actually 8 lines of dialogue, so we need to make up for it.
The toys and not Co. It's all about the toys.
It's all about the action figures. Can't we just get along? Let's just all get along, you superheroes.
Rampaging engine of destruction that the Avengers have to protect themselves against. But then at the end, because now he needs to be someone that can actually fight the aliens. So, hey, Hulk, fight the aliens and don't beat us up either. Can do. I've always had that control.
Hulk
Wait a minute. Okay, I'm sorry.
Hulk will smash for you.
Hulk smash.
This isn't Marvel Movie Break Weekly.
Apple thinking about making electric car charging stations. Now, if you're going to make electric cars, you got to solve this fueling problem. Of course, Tesla famously considered both important products, a supercharger and the automobile. This is all leaks. I hate leaks, but this comes from Reuters and their sources. Reuters sources understand that Apple is asking charging station manufacturers about the technology for its oft-rumored electric car project. NRG Energy said, well, we're talking to every potential manufacturer of tomorrow.
Yeah, wait till I see the Facebook car, Leo. And the Amazon car, it's free if you do deliveries for them. It's amazing.
I want to be a manufacturer of tomorrow. Are they actually making tomorrow?
Yes.
In their little elf factories?
It is interesting, though, because a car involves so many things that, like, for the phone, you do have to go through the FCC and you do have to go through the carriers, but it's still a pretty contained project. But when it gets to getting legal authorization to put your thing on the road in many countries, having the infrastructure in place to support all of that, everywhere from retail to, you know, refueling if it needs special kinds of refueling, that is a much larger and much more leaky endeavor.
Yeah, and there are some cities that are actually trying to give breaks to companies, saying, "Please, we will work with you to give you legislation that will allow you to operate driverless vehicles in our cities, because we really want you to build a transportation infrastructure that we ourselves don't necessarily have to pay for." So there's a lot of interesting movement here. Although, of course, here we are talking about a rumor, not just a rumor of an unannounced, an unofficial product or project, but a rumored accessory about an unannounced product or accessory.
Now, in Apple hiring news, this is very good news. John Callis, who founded PGP Corp, Silent Circle, and Blackphone, a really prestigious security guy, who, by the way, was at Apple in the 90s during security, and again between 2009 and 2011 when he designed an encryption system protecting data stored on a Mac. I guess, I don't know if that's File Vault, but I would guess that is File Vault. He has now been hired, rejoined Apple in this month. And while Apple doesn't say what he'll be doing, I have to think it has something to do with hardening its encryption against Senate.
He's not the new committees. Chef at Cafe Max.
Yes. Well, I'm sure he's a wonderful cook.
Put an end to that rumor immediately. Right.
Yeah. But boy, this guy, I mean, Silent Circle and Blackphone were well respected by the crypto community as real ways to do encryption that nobody could get into, including governments. So Apple, yeah. Obviously continuing along the lines of this.
This is a huge revolution that cuts across all companies. Apple is doubling down against the government, saying we are going to make sure that we are going to protect the phone so hard against ourselves that there is absolutely nothing we can possibly do to help anybody under any circumstances. There's also rumblings that other companies like Facebook and Google particularly really want to hire in a lot of these people because they don't want they want to give their customers the greatest security possible that they themselves still have access to, the company themselves, because one of the problems of hardening security against everybody else means that those are users that Google can't see, those are users that Facebook can't see, and if they basically make things better for their users, they also prevent themselves from getting it in the neck, but they're also in the same sort of liability situation as Apple. It's not just doing good for their users, there's also a lot of good hygiene involved in saying that we do not have the ability, we are not going to be responsible for breaking into our own phones and for harvesting information from our customers that the demands of government and other forces, because we simply do not have that capability. You have to have that clean hands attitude that says that you are asking us to do something that involves manufacturing a unicorn. We would all like to have one, but we can't manufacture one for you. You have to figure out how to make that horse fly on your own.
Actually, I've already ordered a unicorn. Toots, the flying rainbow farting unicorn, and I should be getting that soon. That was an Indiegogo project.
I would like to think that that's one of the no's that Apple said, or the 1,000 no's that led to good ideas.
I couldn't resist. Actually, the creator of Toots, the unicorn, brought him by the studio the other day, and golly, they're so close to their goal at 91% of their goal.
And sunshine. Perfect. And once I'm connected to the internet, I'll let you know when important things happen. The only way a unicorn knows how.
It farts rainbows.
Notifications as well as your favorite hashtags. If you enjoy
exactly,
Twitch, I can announce when your favorite streamers go live. Or if you get a new subscriber or a donation, you simply set me up on your smartphone or in a browser.
This is going to be all the rage on Twitch, kids.
At launch, I'll be ready for Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, and Gmail, with new services being added every day.
We're thinking that every time somebody sends us a nice tweet, we'll have Toots just announce it.
Yabba dabba doo.
Yeah, that's what Gibson does. I have a farting unicorn, my friends. Anything else that we missed before we take a break and go to our back of the book, our final thoughts and picks?
Beautiful day outside.
Yeah, it's a lovely day. Lovely day. And I'm wearing tie-dye. What more could you ask for? You are too. Hey, you found your B-Mug shirt.
Yep.
We're twinsies.
One of these things is not like the others. One of these things isn't the same.
Renee, where's your B-Mug tie-dye shirt?
I am so disappointed.
I got a shirt for you. Actually, Andy already has this one. The Gemini dress shirt from Ministry of Supply, our sponsor today for Mac Break Weekly. Dress smarter, work smarter. This is a company created by engineers from MIT 4 years ago. If you go to ministryofsupply.com, you could take a look at it. Ministryofsupply.com/MacBreak. I'm wearing, just coincidentally, the Ministry of Supply shorts I ordered some months ago before they were a sponsor, because I was looking for something kind of high tech that would give as I walked, made out of really interesting material. The whole idea is to use high-tech fabrics, high-tech design, to give you a better look and better clothes. They work with your body instead of against it. They have work clothes. They have sport clothes, all of them designed by MIT-trained engineers to help regulate your body temperature, keep you from getting too hot or too cold. That's something that B-Mug tie-dye just can't do. Moisture-wicking fibers, they keep you dry. They stretch so you move freely. I've never had a more comfortable pair of shorts, I got to say. You got the Gemini chinos. That's the classic twill chino. Re-engineered. They are right there. To move with you as you go through the day. This is literally cotton blended with temperature-regulating phase change materials. This was invented at NASA, folks. It stores and releases body heat based on surrounding climate. You're basically wearing the same stuff astronauts wear. Think of it as, how about this, the dress shirt? I got one here. Wait a minute. Look at this. This is beautiful. This is the archive dress shirt. So very, very attractive. That's the Gemini button down. That's what you got, Andy, right?
That's what I got, and it's rich. What I liked about it when it came is that, I should mention that
you've gone back to your Ministry of Supply T-shirt.
I was taking that because I wanted to. You guys sent me like a gift certificate because you wanted. We were talking about this last week,
right.
and so you wanted to send me one of these, but the easier thing was to send a gift card. So I got that, this, and the Gemini shirt when it came in. I really like these engineered shirts because you take it out of the box and it looks like a regular standard dress shirt, but then you notice that the cloth is a different type of fiber. And also when you examine it close, I was looking at the stitching, looking at how nice the stitching was, then I noticed that, it's sort of like there's these micro perforations in places where you can't see to like add ventilation. And there's these little vents in the back where it would normally sort of like fold anyway. So it's not just thin material. It really is. It really is like a race car where it's designed for airflow. I don't know what my body shape would look like in a wind tunnel. But it's warm today. I went out for like a 10-mile bike ride this morning. And if you're wearing cotton, you are adding like 3 pounds of wet weight to your back, and it just sticks to you. But if you have an engineered shirt, that definitely costs more than the 4-pack of plain Fruit of the Loom T-shirts. But the thing is, like, I'm wearing a very nice T-shirt, and it's like I'm not wet at all. I'm completely dry. I feel really cool. I've got a fan like underneath the table, and I feel the cooling effect of the fan. And so the extra money it's cost to buy an engineered shirt like this is on a day like this. It's like, that's why I spent the extra money.
Yeah. I bought these shorts because I've been walking to work a lot, a couple of miles, and it's about 85 degrees outside right now. And I wanted something that would be stretchy and comfortable, and they look great. And they feel great, and you don't look like, as somebody said, summertime comes around. There you are. Those are the aviator shirts I'm wearing. Summertime comes around, and men start to dress like 12-year-olds. I think they look a little more attractive, a little more stylish, and they sure feel good. The brushed interior on these shirts, very comfortable against the skin. I just also got these Mercury sweaters. These are really nice. They're a really interesting mix of fabrics. The Merino wool on the extra fine Merino wool wicks moisture and controls odor. There's one of these that has like coffee in it. to control odor. I can't remember which one that is. It's really kind of cool to see materials design come to shirts. Now, we got a deal for you, 15% off with your offer code MacBreak. Just go to ministryofsupply.com/MacBreak. Take the 15% off. I think you'll see these are very affordable and really nice. And the thing is, they're going to last and last. They're so easy to maintain. They're wrinkle resistant. And for travelers, that's what I got. A lot of this is for traveling. Yeah. You can wash and dry them at home, though. Need to iron. They'll look great. Ministry of Supply. Now, don't wait, because this offer will expire June 30th. You have 1 month. They also have stores in your neck of the woods, Andy. They have Boston stores, a San Francisco store, and there's a D.C. store coming soon. Yep. And you can use the 15% off there, too. Just say, I heard it on Mac Break Weekly.
I also bought socks, very nice socks.
Good.
The only caveat I'll give is that, like, the tailored, like, these are, like, stretchy T-shirts, so they'll fit everybody. The tailored shirt, I'm going to have to, like, get a larger size, because it is, athletically cut for a sport that I apparently do not do, because
it's a little bit of a looser cut, right?
Exactly. I need a little bit more, you know, room for smuggling. Smuggling and shoplifting. I think.
You can't fit a ham under that shirt, Andy.
Exactly. I couldn't.
ministryofsupply.com/MacBreak. Don't forget the offer code MacBreak to save 15%. I'm really happy with these. I got a jacket. I bought all this stuff before they said, hey, we'd like to advertise. I said, oh, good, because I have some of your clothes and I really like them.
Without getting to a really long rattle, I just want to say that one of the things that I learned in the past 5 years of basically churning my wardrobe is that it's okay if the price of a certain garment throws you off because it's more than you usually spend. It's okay to have like one or two copies of the really expensive T-shirt or the really expensive jacket or the really expensive pants, and have the regular rotation contain like the regular cotton pants or the regular T-shirt. And you wear, I'm going to wear this when it is like a day like this outside. I'll be very glad it's a day like this outside. And when it's really cold, I will use this as like a base layer to insulate against. You don't have to make your entire wardrobe really expensive things. But it's good to have like a balanced diet so that every time you reach into your closet, you can get exactly the thing that you need.
I agree. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com. What do you got for us today?
So I've got an app, and I have to admit up front that I don't listen to a lot of music. So this app is traditionally would be lost on me. Like, it just wouldn't be something that was on my radar. But I know the developer. He's awesome. I've met him at WWDC several times, Matt Abras, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But then, you know, Jim Dalrymple was using it the last time I saw him in South Bay a few weeks ago. And Dave Mark, who writes for The Loop, was raving about it. So I took a little bit of a deeper look. And it's really, really cool. And he's always been very good at music apps. And what this does, you know, and it's such a cliche to say it does what Apple Music should do, but I think in many ways it does. It just lets you sort of make Apple Music social in a way that's not Connect at all, but in a way that lets you share songs with, you know, people who you're connected to, but also build playlists and share playlists. It has a bunch of other features as well. Like, you can look at clips of videos and things like that. But really, it's the collaborative social nature of the app. If I'm looking for music and I'm not just, you know, For You does a pretty good job, but sometimes I want to see what Jim's listening to, or I want to see maybe what Leo or what Alex or Andy are listening to. And if I follow you on this service, I can really do that. I was on people's wish list for a long time that Apple would basically just look at all your friends' phones maybe and show you the most popular songs that were on their list that weren't on your list, and to surface those for you. And this is sort of a first step there. It integrates really well with Apple Music. You just hit the share button, and it's a share extension right in there, and it lets you share whatever you're listening to with everyone else in the SoundShare community. But it's really where it is that you, so what is Leo listening to? What playlist can I build with Andy that makes it, at least for me, a much more enjoyable experience? Like, I can hit Serenity and see that it's all Hamilton all the time, but I can also see the other things.
But do we have to cooperate? Do I have to use it too?
Yeah, I mean, you do have to invite your friends, so that is a bit of a barrier. But I think if you are really musically and socially inclined, this gives you functionality in a very direct and specific way that you just can't get from other apps.
I agree. I think the best way to find music is to ask people, what do you listen to? This is be great.
Absolutely. And like Instagram, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all of these have ability to share music, but it just gets lost in the fire hose. And like Instagram for photos, if you just want music, I know I can just go here and see what people whose opinions I value are listening to.
Yeah. Very nice. SoundShare. Is it free?
I'm on the beta, so I'm not sure.
But it is out now.
Typically social apps tend to be free, but I'll click on the button and see it. Okay. My apologies.
No, that's all right.
I didn't do that.
Very good. So there it is.
It is free, yes.
As in free, as in no cost.
I think you have to do that for social apps, so you just never build any critical mass.
Right. The whole key is to get an audience in there. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
Mine is kind of an oddball thing. I'm a big fan of a YouTube channel called Techmoan. I can't remember it. T-E-C-H-M-O-A-N. He's this British guy. I think he's in Manchester, who does these really cool, like, little reviews of cameras and stuff like that. Really, really nice. And so he reviewed this thing. It's such a weird thing. It's called the SoShine 6 LED light, and here's what it is. It's a Chinese thing. You get a pack of like a half a dozen of these things for like a buck and a half each, and this is all it is. It is a USB device that has 6 super bright LEDs in it, and so if you put it into any USB port, you get like this really, really intense light. And the cool thing is that it's not just a light. You already see like how bright it is. Like here is I should probably have had that set up like as a lighting system for this show, since I had my temporary lighting things going. There is also a touch sensor on the back of it, so that you can have it, if you hold it down, it will actually dim. There is no manual. There you go. And you can actually tap it again to actually set a certain light setting. And then when you unplug it and plug it back in again, it will then remember that setting and go back to exactly that same setting when you tap it and turn it back on again. And first of all, the first great feature of it is it's like, again, like $1.25 each in a pack of 6. But it's tiny enough that you've got this drawer full of like old like USB phone chargers that you never use anymore, like the little marshmallow ones. Well, how about you just plug that into like a kitchen socket or like a hall socket, and this is now just a nightlight? Or how about you have this like in your wallet or in your laptop bag, because I almost always have a phone charger with me. And if I ever need like an extra source of light, I can just simply pluck this out. Or pretty much anytime you need a little bit of extra light somewhere. I actually had one. I bought 2 packs, which means that you, again, $1.25, so you may as well just like put them wherever. I actually had one plugged into the back of my TV, you know, where it has that USB diagnostic port. And it's always on, but it's consuming like no power pretty much. And so basically whenever I need to change cables, there's always like a little like downwash light that is illuminating the labels for like all the different things that I'm plugging in. And I just like it because I love dirt cheap little things that work well. And again, granted, there's no case, there's no logo, there's no nothing, but I bet that you could like get an action figure and like hollow it out and put this in the back and have like your Batman or your Wonder Woman nightlight, USB nightlight.
I like it.
it doesn't fart rainbows like your upcoming USB.
Not everything thing, but can be amazing.
But yeah, but for $1.25, you can make whatever you want, excrete whatever you want, and do it with bright light.
I imagine they're using something like that in addition to a fog machine to create. Wow, it is bright. Holy cow.
Yeah. It's actually kind of, at its maximum setting, it's actually kind of painful to look at.
Wow.
But you can, LEDs. You can dim it down.
Is there anything they can't do?
My God. You think that this is, you can't imagine the difference between growing up, having a camping lantern as a kid, where it takes this huge, like a boot box sized battery. And if you left it on when you fell asleep reading comic book, it was dead and it cost you another $8.
And it wasn't that bright.
Right. Versus this thing that will light up my entire room, and I could leave it on for 4 days during a blackout, not even bothering to turn it off, and it will still. You kids today, you live in a world of wonders, and I hope you're grateful for all this.
Appreciate it, my God. By the way, I bought those crazy precision steel 1-2-3 blocks that you recommended last week, and I love them.
Yeah,
I got the tin ones, the titanium. They're just so cool, and you're right, covered with machine oil. So I had to brush them off.
I'm using.
It's so fun.
I have CreamCam 3000, the future video podcasting, hooked up. Here's what I've got, like, they're using for, like, right now. I've got, like, my beverage here, but I don't want to accidentally, like, spill it on my thing. So I actually just have it here so that if I happen to, like, knock it over, it's not gonna knock over these really cool steel boxes.
We're also, like, confirmed for pants.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. there's so many fun things to talk about. I wasn't sure what to pick this week, but I have for a long time recommended and used. It started with Fink. I like having a package manager on OS X that lets me install other useful Unix-y command line style tools. Fink was a long time favorite. They kind of got superseded by Homebrew, which I probably still recommend. It's brew.sh. Easy to install, and it lets you install using a simple command, brew, a lot of other useful utilities that don't come with OS X, or update things. Like, if you want to, OS X comes with an old version of Python, you want to get a newer version. I found a really fun command line utility, bpython3, that lets me do Python 3 at the command line. It's really cool. All of that's available with Homebrew, but there's a new one that I think has some real features to recommend. And if you haven't yet settled on Homebrew, take a look at Nix, N-I-X. That's nixos.org. And this actually is both Linux and OS X. It doesn't have the variety of packages that Homebrew or Fink had, but it's growing very rapidly because it's a package manager that is used very widely. And it does something very smart, which is it keeps all of your installed apps in a single folder, and it's very easy to uninstall them so they don't mess up your system. Homebrew and Fink both do that a little bit, but this is even better, frankly, than either of those. So the packages are somewhat limited, but for a lot of people that isn't a problem because, you know, if it's got the packages you care about, then it doesn't matter that it has 1,000 more. So Nix is part of a larger OS distribution, but Nix, the package manager, is available for OS X and works quite nicely. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, check it out. nixos.org/nix. But if you don't have that Homebrew, you should have one of them. I mean, how else are you going to put Emacs on your OS X machine, right?
Right.
Right. Thank you, Renee. By the way, spaces or tabs? Consider it, because the wrong answer could get you booted out of this show. Did you see Silicon Valley? Maybe you. I'm hearing dead silence, so neither of you saw Silicon Valley.
I only watch it when it shows up on iTunes.
I don't get the HBO.
Okay, never mind. People at home, you know what I'm talking about. Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Great to have you. All the great podcasts and the great writing you've done. A million words and going strong. imore.com. He's on the Twitter at RENERITCHIE.
Four spaces so it confuses people for a tab, Leo. That's what I'm going for.
Yes. Well, there's no spoilers, but it becomes an issue.
Four non-break spaces or ASCII variants. There we go.
At one point, sir, who's the head of Pied Piper? You know, the gangly, funny guy.
I can't
remember his name. But anyway, he's like adamant. Why would you use spaces instead of a tab?
I don't understand.
His girlfriend says, because you don't know what tab will look different on depending on the machine and what the tab's setting to. You have to use spaces. He says, but that's four keystrokes. He says, I'm all about file compression. So he tries to demonstrate it to her by taking the stairs eight steps at a time and it doesn't end well. He also uses Emacs. All right. And Andy Nanatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, a great pleasure. Richard, that's it. Richard, great pleasure. Thank you.
There are kinds of engineers for whom the easiest solution is to force everyone in the entire world to use a monospaced font.
There you go.
I'm not one of those people, so I would tabs. That's tabs.
It was almost my pick of the week was a monospaced font called Hack. I have a folder of programming fonts. I collect them.
Oh, they're great.
Droid Sans, Source Code Pro. Don't use Monaco. Really? Come on. There's so much better out there in Consolata. But Hack is a nice one. It's one I've been using lately. This is turning into the terminal show.
SF
now.
Mono all next week.
SF Mono, that's but the one.
Every time we talk about this instead of some lawsuit, we push the eject button on two different lawsuit stories, and everyone is saying thank God they just acknowledge it exists and that there's something better to talk about, like monospaced fonts and Marvel movies.
When they make a monospaced Comic Sans, then my life will be complete. Probably somebody already has.
Comic Mono Sans.
Comic Mono.
What have you done, Leo? Mark your calendars, kids. This is the end of civilization.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will be back next Tuesday, as always, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1800 UTC. 2 weeks from now, right, is WWDC, and that keynote is on a Monday, if I'm remembering correctly. All right, so we'll figure out who's not going. Are you going, Renee? Of course you are.
Yes.
Andy, you're staying home, though, right? Of course you are.
I'm staying home. So yeah. I will be with you in spirit, body, or in electrons if you'd like
Do it via the electrons at 10 a.m. Pacific on a week from Monday, 2 weeks hence. And then, of course, we'll discuss it in 2 weeks on Mac Break Weekly. I think there's going to be a lot of stuff to say. There's going to be a lot of stuff to say.
I believe so.
I think so.
They only release a mono font. We'll have enough to say.
Comic Mono, ladies and gentlemen. It's coming soon.
San Francisco Mono.
Aerial Mono. Let's do the whole world a favor. Aerial Mono.
Aerial Mono would be all right. I'd take that. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Remember, you can watch the show live, but you can also get it on demand if you want. Audio and video available at twit.tv/MBW or subscribe. Don't forget, last few days to get your special World Tour T-shirt, Teespring, teespring.com/twit. We do these limited edition shirts. June 12th is the final day to get it. On the front, it says TWIT IPTV. We finally come out as an IPTV network. On the back, we call it the World Tour T because it looks like these are tour dates, but no, these are all the shows on the TWIT network. And we're making them a very affordable at $20. There are men's and women's styles and sizes to fit all, including programmer sizes. But 12 days... as we do this. So please get over to teespring.com/twit and get your one of a kind. What are you laughing at, Andy?
I'm just thinking that perhaps we should have I'm going to do a Kickstarter where it's going to be fun. Like I need $5,000 so I can spend 2 weeks in a hotel room doing nothing but thinking of a really good alternative word for athletic cut. That says for people that's not insulting. It just simply says that for those of us who are work just as hard to,
yeah, I think Levi's already did it. It's those jeans with a skosh more room.
Skosh cut.
We need more a skosh.
How about was cut?
Was cut.
There is nothing offensive about anything about you being compared to Steve Wozniak. If it's that you need to have a shirt that's cut a little bit more fully around the tummy, that's fine.
Was cut.
There you go.
Was cut jeans.
Any company that will sell like clothing where one of the options is a was cut, I don't care what it is, I will buy it.
The bandolier.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time's over!
And the cuffs on the sleeves are extra big for the Nixie watch.
That's right. I love it when it comes right at the end. Yes, and it did.
I like this idea.
Yep. Yep, we have a
class to steaks too. I mean, like I would order a steak that was a was cut too.
Yeah, everything should be was size. Yes. Yeah, I agree.
You want that car was sized? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Super duper was
economy, business, or was class, sir.